Well, good morning to each one of you. Just want to wish you the grace and the mercy and peace of God. And I want to greet you in Jesus' name. It's really good to be here. It's always good to be back here at Summit View. Brings back a lot of memories for me. And seeing a lot of people that I know and knew for quite some time, and people that I went to school with and youth group and church for many years, and just a lot of good memories. Still seems to me a little, not sure what the right term is, but it almost seems bizarre for me to be standing up here and preaching a message to you across this pulpit here. Not sure that I'll ever quite get used to that thought, but God is good, and hopefully we can learn from His Word today again. So, the message that I have today is a pulpit exchange message. So, I'm not sure that I can say it was assigned to me, because I'm on the pulpit exchange message committee. And I think it was someone, it might have even been Junior, that said that one benefit of that is you can look down over those 15 to 20 titles, I'm not even sure how many there were, and you can just pick out the one that you want to preach. And being as human and selfish as I am, I guess I tried to pick a pretty easy one, thought I did. And maybe I didn't put enough of thought into it, but it's a message that spoke to my heart, and I was convicted, and I suppose maybe God's hand was in all of that, and He wanted to teach me a lesson through that. So most times that's how it works. Those of us who preach, or even those who have devotions and study for teaching Sunday school and all that, you know that you probably learn the most when you study for a topic or a message or whatever it may be. And so that's probably going to be the case here. But hopefully you can be encouraged as well and be challenged. So the title of the message is Thy Speech Betrayeth Thee. I'm not sure who gave this title. I understand that it may have been from here somewhere. But it's interesting to look into, and it of course has to do with our speech. And hopefully we can go a little bit deeper into that. Speech is a gift. Words are a gift. Words are what we use to communicate, and we build relationships, and I'm guessing probably most of you haven't really thought about how much you use your words this morning. Probably most of you haven't thanked God that you could speak this morning, and that you can pronounce words with your mouth. I thought about that a little bit more this past week. There's a brother in our church there at West Haven that just had a massive stroke here a week ago. And I was over there to see him a couple days ago, and he can't talk. He was fairly with it. I believe he knew who I was. I believe he understood at least in part what I said. And he could respond. He could move his one side some. And yet he can't speak. No words. And so I can speak to him. I can talk to him and encourage him. And there's no response as far as his speech. And most likely that apart from a miracle, that won't ever come back again. So speech is a gift. Words are a gift. And so thank God that you can speak and that you can communicate. Anyway, that's maybe a little off of the subject. But as we look at the title, Thy Speech Betrayeth Thee, it comes straight from, or almost straight from a Matthew 26. I think we're pretty familiar with that passage there where Jesus is on trial in front of, I think it's Caiaphas there. And I understand there's probably a group of people there milling around, talking, you know, what's going on, what's happening. And Peter is there in that group of people. And there's people coming to Peter and they're talking with Peter and they're starting to understand that, Peter, I think you were with this man. You were also with Jesus, weren't you? And Peter denies knowing who Jesus was, denies knowing that he's the man. And in verse 73 there in Matthew 26, another person came to him, says, "Surely thou art also one of them, for thy speech betrayeth thee." I suppose that's where this title comes from. And betrayeth, from what I could tell, means the same as betray. I think it's maybe an old English, but that's what the King James uses there. But it does mean to betray or to reveal something about that person. And as we look at that title, we understand that our speech reveals something about us. Oftentimes when you hear somebody speak, you can tell at least in part what they're thinking and what is inside. And I'd like for us to think about that as we go throughout the message and ask yourself the question, if I meet someone, does that person, after we leave maybe, does that person say, wow, he has been with Jesus, or he knows who Jesus is? In this context here, it almost may seem like they were speaking of his accent or his dialect, and that could possibly be. I would like to think and suggest that maybe it means even more than that, and maybe it means that they understood or they seen something in Peter's speech, in his what he was saying or how he was saying it, that made them think that this person was with Jesus. He knows who Jesus is, and he was walking with Jesus. And wasn't that true, that Peter in these last 3 years or so had been walking very closely with Jesus as one of his disciples? He had abandoned his livelihood. He had left everything to follow Christ. And he was very much influenced by what Christ was teaching him. And it, even though maybe a lot of the understanding of his understanding of who Jesus was and why he came was maybe somewhat misled or skewed at this point, yet I think he was understanding more and more who Jesus was. And I believe it was spilling into his language and the way that he handled himself and in the way that he talked. And I hope that can be the challenge for us today, that as we think about the words that we say, does it speak to us having that close walk with him? Turn to James 3. I was not really going to turn to this passage until, I think it was fairly late last evening. It seemed like I kind of kept coming back to this, and it, I'm not sure if I want to read it all here for the sake of time, but James expresses the importance very much throughout the book of James, again and again. I think in every chapter he speaks of our language or our speech and the way we speak and the way we talk, but he really emphasizes it here in James 3, and he talks about the tongue and how that it is something that needs to be controlled. And in the first couple verses there, in verse 2, there's something that really stood out to me, and I think that we need to understand that our words are really a big deal, and what we say does really matter. And we'll get into a little bit more of that, but especially as we relate to friends and close brothers and sisters. Verse 2 says, "For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body." James is telling us here that offenses in word, I believe he's suggesting here that happens far more often and far easier than by our actions. We cause offenses by our words. And how many times have we said things that we probably shouldn't have said, or maybe not said some things that we should have, but probably more often said things that we shouldn't have said. And it has caused an offense. And he's saying here that if we can control our tongue, if we can be mindful of that small member that gets us in trouble, it says the same is a perfect man, or the same is a man of maturity, a man that has mastered an awful lot. And he goes on and he talks about, he likens it to a bit in a horse's mouth, or a rudder on a ship, or a helm, I think it calls it here. How those small things are not even, most of them are not even seen, or you can see very little of them, and yet it causes the course of that horse or that ship. And I believe in the same way our tongue, maybe not guiding our bodies, but guiding and influencing the course of our lives and the course of the lives of others as we influence others. And he talks about the fire the tongue as being a fire as well, something that is raging out of control. Some of you witnessed that and experienced that very closely this past week, how that fire, when it is not controlled, is extremely devastating, and there's a lot of loss of possessions and things like that. But at the same time, a fire can be very helpful. And imagine trying to go through life without fire. There's a lot of things that we use fire for that are, if it's controlled, it's very, very useful as far as heating and just a lot of light and things like that. And so, again, I think in all of this, he's showing us how the unbridled tongue is very dangerous, but as we control that, can be very, very helpful, can be very encouraging, as we together can encourage each other and using our tongue in that way. Verse 8 says that the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. And it seems overall here James is somewhat painting a somewhat of a negative picture of the tongue. There's a lot of things that it can do damage, and there's in verse 8 there, full of deadly poison. But I take courage in the fact, I guess, that he does specifically say that no man can tame the tongue. But I would like to think about this morning when the Spirit of God is living inside a person, when we are guided by the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit comes into our lives, then the tongue can be tamed. It can be controlled, not by man, but by the Spirit of God. I'm going to come back to that in just a little bit, but going on there into the next couple verses, he talks about how that, maybe I'll just read those verses. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. The world we live in, our society, the people around us, people we rub shoulders with, there's a lot of very loose language out there. There's some very, lots of extra words. Jesus said, let your yea be yea and your nay, nay. Suggesting that we don't need to use a lot of extra words. And it seems like that happens a lot in just around us. And I'm afraid oftentimes it rubs off on us as well. Anything from, yes, extra describing words, words that try to make a point, to suggestive words, to just downright vulgar language. And I think it's important that we don't adopt that and allow that to push into the way that we speak. And I feel like far too often it can, and maybe just a hybrid of the words that they use in a little different sense, it sounds maybe a bit not as bad. I was convicted of that. There's probably some of those things that I need to work on. And I suppose that probably some of you can think of some of those as well. But as we allow that to rub off on us, and we start adopting some of those forms of those words, I just want to ask you a question. Could it be that it is because, or could it be that we are exposing the fact that we are not walking closely enough with Christ? Could it be betraying what really is inside? James says, out of the same mouth, or he asks the question, doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? I think the obvious answer to that is no. And Jesus refers to that as well. When I turn back to Matthew 12, and I think there's a principle here that we need to understand. In Matthew 12, verse 34, he says, O generation of vipers, this is Jesus speaking. How can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. I said earlier, our words are a big deal, and I really believe that as I read those words from Jesus. Those words that we say are going to make a difference on the day of judgment. The words that we say reveal or betray what is inside. And when we are speaking words, and I'm thinking now more of just our everyday language, it betrays what's inside. Another thing I thought about as I was thinking about some of the things that are very prevalent, I feel like, in today, and things that we face. And again, I believe that we are guilty of these. I am guilty of some of these same things, is words that are negative, and ideas, and looking at life in a very negative perspective. And it's really hard to relate to someone, I feel, when anything that they say, or almost everything they say, is just negative. It's hard to relate to a person like that, I find. And yet at times I find myself being somewhat negative. And it's a lot of little small things, like it's always raining, or it's too dry, or the corn prices are too low, or the milk prices, or the fertilizer prices are too high, or us farmers, some of us are known for just being a little negative, and I was convicted of some of those things. There was a man that had been coming to church there at West Haven for some time. Some couple of the brothers from there reached out to him. Not exactly sure how they found him, but he was a homeless man, and he came there almost every Sunday there for a while. I remember the first Sunday he was there, one of the first Sundays he was there, I went up to him after church and I asked him how he's doing. And there was not a single thing in his life that was going right. There was absolutely nothing to be thankful for. He had such a sob story about everything. And I'm not sure that I had ever met a person that was so negative about everything. And it was hard to even know how to talk to him, because if you would try to speak something positive, he would just say, well, that's not the way it is for me. And, everything is against me. And he was very vocal about that. And he kept coming to church. And I very slowly started noticing a difference in his outlook of life. And I believe that it was because of the influence that some of the men from church that were fairly closely involved in his life, and there was a difference in the way that he looked at life. And he doesn't come to church near every Sunday anymore, but a couple weeks ago he was there, and I was talking with him, and I could not believe the difference. I think he still needs the Lord. I don't think he's saved, but he is quite a bit different in his outlook of life. And he was struggling with, I think it was hives or something, some kind of thing that he was dealing with over that time, or just before that. And even in that, he said how that things are better, and he's feeling so much better than he was. I guess I say that to say that I think that we can have a very positive and good influence on the people that we speak with, when we can speak positive things even into negative situations. And I thought about Reuben, your fire this week. That's a really negative thing. It's a big loss. It's something that we never want to experience. And yet, I see Reuben is seeing positive things coming and positive things that he's experiencing even in the midst of this very negative situation. And I think that can speak volumes to those who are maybe watching us more than what we realize. There's a verse I want to look at with that. If I can find it now, I think it's in Titus. Should have wrote it down. Titus 2 verse 7, it says, "In all things showing thyself a pattern of good works in doctrine, showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you." Our words, our outlook on life does make a difference. Now I would like to turn to Ephesians 4 yet and just look at one other aspect of this. Ephesians 4, the context of this is, I feel like a picture here of the church, the body of Christ, many members working together, giving of their gifts, and things can work together and flow. Ephesians 4, verse 16, "The whole body fitly joined together, compacted by that which every joint supplieth, working together effectively." And I believe that is what we would like to see as a church. I believe you would like to see that in your brotherhood. And let's make it practical right here at Summit View now. Verse 17, "This I say therefore, and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of their mind, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over unto lasciviousness to work all uncleanness with greediness." We look at those verses, that is where the world is. Maybe that is where we had been at one time. There's as darkness, it's blindness, it's an ugly picture. Verse 20, "But ye have not so learned Christ, if so be that ye have heard him and have been taught by him, as the truth is in Jesus, that ye put off concerning the former conversation the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that ye put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness." And I think this is the key to controlling our tongues, is when the Spirit of God is within us. When we make that change from darkness to light, from blindness to being able to see. And it talks there in verse 17 about our walk. And in verse 21, it says, "And if so be that ye have heard him and have been taught by him," as our fellowship is with Christ, as we look into his word, as we learn from his word, as we commune with Christ, as we speak to him, as Peter did with Christ when he walked with Jesus on this earth, if we have heard him, if we have been taught by him, those things make a difference in our lives. And then our speech, as we speak to others, it betrays some of those things. And I say that in a positive way. That's positive. when we do that. Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Be angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that ye may have to give to him that needeth. And verse 29, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. This is such an important verse, and I wish that I could expound to you what it means to minister grace. And I don't know that I can do that, but I believe that there's a very beautiful picture here. As we think about a brotherhood, as we relate to each other, as we communicate with each other, there's a lot of differences. There's a lot of things that we may not see eye to eye on, but let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth. Let's use our words to edify each other. Let's use our words to build each other up. Let's use our words to minister grace to each other instead of tearing down, instead of that corrupt communication that tears down and that degrades and that gossips and slanders. And you know, there's so much, so many scenarios, I feel, in our churches, in our plain churches, that words are exchanged and it brings division in churches, it brings division in families, in homes, between brothers, brother to brother, sister to sister. Even, and this comes into the homes, into our marriages, our relationships with our spouses and our children. And I think that's another place where I feel like I can probably do a lot better in is just being gracious with my children when there's things that, situations that come up that may be frustrating. How do I respond to that? And if I lash out or if I raise my voice, is that an indication? Is that betraying something inside that shouldn't be there? That's a challenge for myself. How is it with the relationships you have with? And I'm speaking especially close relationships in the church, in the home. I think it's important. I know it is. There has been much hurt and much heartache because of harsh words. Proverbs 18:21 says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." Words are powerful. Words can hurt. Words can tear down. My encouragement is that we can speak words of healing, words of grace, words of hope, words of help. As we do that, I believe that will happen when our relationship with God, our communion with God is current, our walk with God is current. And so I leave you with that challenge. Let's not be two-sided. Let's not be two different people talking one way on a Sunday morning and different during the week. Singing songs like More Love to Thee, O Christ, and then tearing down a brother or a sister during the week. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Let's speak life and grace into each other's lives. Minister grace to each other. No corrupt communication. Just want to close with the verses at the end of Ephesians 4 there. It says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. May God bless you. Let's kneel for prayer.